Welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced Program. Let's get started.
All right, welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie, and I have a very special guest today, and it is Dr. Darren Porcher. And boy, I'll tell you, I see your face and I hear you all the time. Seems like daily now on the news.
Yeah, well, there's ups and downs with that, but thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Darren, if you would, give our listeners a little bit just of your background. And before you do, one thing I do want to say is very much a sincere thank you for your service, both to our country and the military, and also as a police officer. So thank you very much for that. And if you could give our listeners a little bit of the details. I know 20 years with the NYPD, but you've been wearing many hats, haven't you?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, Donnie. I really appreciate it. I was in active duty. I went into active duty, I guess, when I was 19, did 4 years on active duty, then stayed in the reserves. And while I was in the reserves, simultaneously, I worked as a police officer in the NYPD. And I was a police officer. I was a detective. I was a sergeant and I was a lieutenant, you know, performed a multitude of different duties throughout the course of the 20-year tenure that I had in the NYPD. In the military, I was an officer in the Army and did a series of different things, you know, from personnel management, you know, acquisition of logistics, you know, deployments, things to that effect. And I do a lot of the television stuff for a lot of the major networks, be it CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, and a lot of the local broadcast stations here in New York. In addition to that, I'm a criminal justice professor at Pace University, and I have a doctorate degree from Fordham University as well. And I'm happy to be on with you today.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And I'm honored to have you. And with all those things that you're doing, sometimes, you know, and then we step back and then sometimes may say, okay, well, I wonder how Darren's work-life balance is. Talk to me a little bit about that, you know.
The work-life balance is funny. You know, or, you know, one of the things I didn't mention is I function as an expert, whereas I testify in trials all over the country as an expert. And, you know, one of the things when we speak about balance, I think that is somewhat overwhelming on the other end in connection with the expert work, because I just have a series of cases that have been somewhat, I don't want to say challenging, but they've amassed a tremendous amount of time, because when you work on these cases, it's very important that you pay specific detail to the attention of the related discovery in connection with the matters that you're involved in. Because when you understand, the defense attorney is not going to go light on you and say, well, you know what, I know you probably didn't look at that, so we'll go move on to this. So, you know, they'll cite it as a deficiency. So that's kind of where my time is in terms of the balance. In addition to that, you know, just trying to keep up with, because I'm a criminal justice professor, you know, what are the nuances in criminal justice? I just try to stay abreast to it as best as possible. So when I'm in the classroom from a practitioner's perspective, I'm able to effectively give an understanding or definition as to what's occurring in the course in the class. Right now, the in-class sessions has been a moratorium on that. So everything has been more or less online learning as it relates to what we're experiencing in connection with the COVID-19 pandemic. So that's kind of it for me in a nutshell.
Yeah, I appreciate it very much, the overview of all that. And switch me over to your personal life. So have you?
Two kids?
Yeah. How old are the kids?
Two adult kids, 23 and 31. And personal life is all over the place, just trying to manage different silos to things, such as whether it's, you know, family. It's not so much as a social life as much as it was in the past, based on the lockdowns that we have in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. That's been somewhat beneficial to me as it relates to what I do as an expert, because a lot of my trials as of lately, trials and depositions, have been on Zoom, so to speak. So it's really allowed me the ability to amass a body of work that's been consistent with me testifying accordingly in court. So that's kind of where it's been. So there hasn't been many gaps.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, are your children, adult children, are they in the New York City area near you?
One is my youngest is the 23-year-old lives in New York, and the 31-year-old lives out of state.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And get to see them very much?
Well, you know, it's kind of weird because we speak every day. You know, and just, you know, I don't know if that's a fault of my own in terms of being a helicopter parent. I want to say that I am a helicopter parent, but oftentimes we connect on a daily basis and we're involved in quite a bit. One of my kids lives here. When I say lives here, I mean, they don't live in my house, but they live in close proximity. So there's the connection is what it is here. But the one that lives out of the state, we tend to speak every day. And I just, I'm basically abreast of what happens on both ends. And the more unfortunate component is, as a parent, you find yourself as being somewhat of an enabler, and you now partner with the endeavors that they're dealing with throughout the course of their lives. Whereas I just remember when I was a kid, that wasn't the case. You were on your own. I mean, I was 19 when I went on active duty, man. And, you know, you meet a drill sergeant straight off the bus, and then, you know, the pace moves forward that way. But, you know, now, you know, I want to say the level of independence has been very marginalized from this newer generation, to say the least, you know. So, like, well, that's what it is.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I was still 18. Yeah, 18 in basic training down at Fort Benning, Georgia.
Yep. Okay. So like, I never asked my parents for anything. Yeah. Like, what are you kidding me? Like, the last thing. You need something? Okay, I guess you may want to work a couple hours extra for overtime. But yeah. Now this is a very different dynamic. I'm sorry, Ben.
No, I was going to say that I think we all have that memory of the first time meeting a drill sergeant. We never forget that memory. I still get nervous if I see a drill sergeant with their hat on.
The brown hats. You know, it's funny because, you know, I was on act, to bring you up to speed from what my background is. Initially, I was enlisted. So when I went in as an enlisted person, you know, we had a drill sergeant, and that's kind of what it was. And then I circled back years later, I got a commission and I went through OCS. And it was a very different dynamic. Believe it or not, I felt that OCS was harder than boot camp. Yeah. Oh, big time. I definitely thought that it was harder. So I guess a lot of it was, I was older too, because I want to say I was 19 years old when I went on active duty. And then when I did the transition into OCS, I was older, and I felt it as if I was far more mature. But I was in good shape when I went through, don't get me wrong. But at the same token, I just felt that it was a more challenging endeavor going through OCS than it was for me to go through boot camp.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, speaking of being in good shape back then, talk to me about, cause that's one of the things when I talk about work-life balance, my research, and like you, I got my PhD later in life and things like that, and finished the research a few years ago. But one of the things that I looked at was how well people take care of themselves from a physical perspective, mental health, physical health, social and spiritual, but from, as a law enforcement officer, you know, 20 years in NYPD, how did you stay in shape, and was it important to you, your physical health? And, you know, do you watch what you eat? Do you try to eat healthy? Where are you at on those things?
I mean, I was in the gym earlier today. I'm in the gym very heavy. And I just want to say, you know, when I first went in the military, I wasn't working out as much. I guess, you know, I was doing things when I went through boot camp. And I think that was probably, in Texas, was probably my first true introduction to fitness, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I took fitness far more serious when I was, you know, after boot camp, you know, I want to say after tech school. So when I was at my permanent assignment, that's when, you know, I guess the physical rigor was something that I was kind of surrounded by. So, you know, at 19, I want to say even 20 years old, I mean, I was eating everything, but I was still working out. So yeah, it was fine. But then, you know, as I've progressed in age, I'm 54 now. So, I mean, now I don't eat any beef. I don't eat any pork. I don't drink alcohol anymore, which is so crazy. I thought I would have never said that before. Not from the perspective of having a dependency problem. It's just that, as you know, as things have progressed for me, in terms of life, I've kind of stepped away from it, and I bought a Life Fitness bike a couple of years ago, and I use that in my house, because what happens is, you know, my workouts are bifurcated in two directions. The first part is I'll do my cardio, which is in my house, which is probably the best place for me to do it. I do a hard body hour of cardio before I go into the gym. So I do, and I'm pouring with sweat. And what's comfortable about it is I have a room in my house, so I'm able to do it autonomously, and there's no one around me. So then I take a shower, and then I go into the gym, and then I work with free weight. And so I do that, you know, 4 days a week, I'm in the gym, I'm doing that part of it. But just in terms of managing my mental health, I think that's probably the biggest challenge for most people. How are you able to place things in different silos as you move forward? Like, you know, there can be stress factors or stressors in your life, and you need to be able to separate that from your ability to get things done accordingly. And I think that as I've gotten older, I'm 54 now, as I've gotten older, I've become more readily prepared to manage that dynamic. Because at this stage, the physical thing is pretty easy for me. I already have a set pattern. It's lockstep and it moves, and that's already there. But like in terms of managing the mental health component, I think for me, I'm at a better place now. But at the same token, it's just your ability to triage different situations that come in front of you. Because I deal with very violent situations, as I mentioned to you earlier, in connection with, you know, these cases as an expert. You know, I have a couple of sexual offenses, you know, rapes, that I'm testifying in court for, homicides. I have a very multifaceted tapestry in what I'm an expert in. So a lot of that stuff can, I don't want to say cause a level of post-traumatic stress disorder, but you have to have the ability to separate yourself from what you're doing on the computer and in court testimony from who you are as a person. So that requires you to employ a means of different facets that you can bring into your life, not just the workout, but more so managing your mental state. And like I said, now I'm at 54, so I'm in a better place. But at the same token, in the past, it was somewhat of a challenge, because oftentimes I dove into things all the way. And that's, you know, that can be to a fault. Like if something is in front of me, I just kind of want to finish it and put it behind me so I can move forward to the next agenda, because psychologically it's always bothering me, like, damn, I need to circle back and I need to revisit this. But if it's done, it's done, and I can move forward. So when you ask me how I manage, you know, just my personal life, I think, you know, a healthy body relates to a healthy mind, and that's where the workouts come into play. But going back to that mental health component, that's when you need to have a plausible direction on moving in that in a place where is your mind is right.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I often tell my kids, I have four children. Two of them are still in the house. They're juniors and senior daughters. And with the pandemic and everything, you know, they go to school part-time and online at home, you know, in school, but they've developed a habit this year of going to the gym and working out. And I've watched it, because, you know, they get to see me do that, or I go out for a run and things like that. And the joke, but it's really not a joke. And they go, well, Dad, why do you run? You know, why do you enjoy running so much and things like that? And I go, I enjoy the gym as well. But when I go out for a run, go run 4 miles, I go, it's more mental therapy for me than actually physical therapy.
Yes. Yeah. No. Because you're toning out a lot of the things that you're dealing with. So I got you.
Yeah. Yeah. And now take me back when you were, with NYPD, the mental health component, you know, because today our officers today, you know, within this past year, about everything that officers are going through with the media, you know, defund police, you know, messages out there and all of that. It's always difficult. Any type of traumatic events are difficult, but now it's almost that police officers are getting that, you know, we see things where they're getting poured, you know, milk on, you know, thrown at, stuff's thrown at them. People are still shooting at them, unfortunately, you know, all of that kind of stuff, all the terrible, rough things that are going on. What advice do you have for some of those officers when it comes to, you know, keeping that mental health in a good wellness position, if you will?
You know, that's a very interesting statement. When we look at a department as large as the NYPD, 36,000 officers, it becomes very compartmentalized. And you can probably respect what I'm going to say in connection with the contrast and comparison from military to being a police officer. In the military, you have people that are in infantry units, and you have people that are in garrison units, and you have people that are in support units. So there's a very different level of stress attributed to each of those components. The same holds true in policing. I give you an example. You have an officer that works in narcotics, that's an undercover, that's going out and buying drugs, and their level of stress is going to be very different than an officer that is, let's say, a captain that is a precinct commander. There's going to be a very different dynamic of stress attributed to those two entities. Or we have other components in the NYPDs that are not enforcement driven, such as I was an instructor in a police academy for a period of time. So when I was a sergeant for 3 years, I taught recruits in recruit training. So that being said, the level of stress was not at an apex in that particular assignment. So I think you really want to focus more specific on the silos or those groups of people that are engaged in stress-related activity. And the same holds true with the military. Like if you're an engineer, you know, you're blowing up stuff or you're testing for bombs, of course your stress level is going to be through the roof, you know, as opposed to we have people on active duty that have a sole responsibility for groundskeeping, such as mowing lawns and, you know, shoveling snow. And that's okay, because that support base, that support mechanism is necessary for the mission to continue. It's multifaceted. It's not monolithic. That being said, when we look at policing, I think the most important thing for me when I, you know, in looking at the stress that people are dealing with, because I've worked in highly enforcement related units while I was in the department. And believe it or not, as crazy as this may sound, those enforcement related units, you really don't feel the level of stress that you do in the places where is, let's say you're managing administrative issues and there are deadlines attributed to these administrative issues, such as they can be an acquisition of a specific logistic and you're trying to do any and everything to bid on that and it may fall through, but this is necessary to support another mission within the department. And then you have a higher up within the administration that's barreling down on your shoulders, telling you, I need it and I need it now. And so in those types of instances, there can be a lot of stress that the officer is being burdened with. Whereas a lot of times with the enforcement related activities, it's just like one right after the other. Okay, you walk into something and let's say hypothetically, there was a family dispute. You went in, there was a husband and wife that got into it. The husband pulls out a knife. You have to take him to the ground. You cuff him. And then that person is arrested. And then what will happen is you'll probably be partnered with someone else for the remainder of the tour. And you continue going out, pulling people over, doing car stops, felony car stops. This car was possibly involved in a gunpoint robbery. You're pulling this person over. The adrenaline is going through the roof. A lot of times once you go from one to the next, and then it can recede to something as simple as going to someone's house because let's say there was a child that didn't come home an hour after they got out of school or a noise complaint. So you're on this emotional roller coaster, so to speak, but I just think that you generally become conditioned to accept it more so in those enforcement driven units than you do in the administratively driven units. I'm waiting for a promotion. This is a discretionary promotion. Are they going to pass me over? Are they going to come? When is the call coming through? You know, those in many cases are stressors. In addition to that, your life outside of the department falling into a schedule that accommodates the rest of your family schedule, such as if you have small kids, then they'd be dropped off, picked up, things to that effect. I think those issues, those external issues are probably more significant in connection with stress than the quote unquote officer that has the that's drawing their weapon and taking enforcement action. But keep in mind, I'm just giving you this as my perspective, but you can have another person that can give you a very different aspect. And it goes back to what I mentioned earlier, the multifaceted nature of policing, which is something similar to what happens in the military, which creates a different dynamic and stress depending upon what you're doing as a result.
Now, that's an excellent perspective. I appreciate that. And when you take me back to a time when you were an officer, did you ever feel like your life, if you think about balance, you know, priorities in life and things like that, did you ever have a time where you sort of your priorities got out of whack a little bit and you had to sort of reset yourself? Did you ever go through anything like that?
Let me tell you, your priorities set around coming to work to do the 8 hours. Everything else comes outside of the 8 hours. When they give you a tour, whether it's an 8 to 4 or 4 to 12 or 12 to 8, that is your priority. So everything else evolves around that priority. So a lot of it is just trying to thread the needle to ensure that your schedules align accordingly. When I say my priorities, that was there a shift? I would never say that was never the case, because you become preconditioned to understanding that the job is number one, and then everything else becomes secondary, including your family. Your wife will say something like, look, you know what? I have an invitation to the Smith's wedding in 2 weeks or a month. And your first thought is, let me see what my schedule permits. It's not, sure, sign me up, I'm gonna go. What is the availability and scheduling at work? So a lot of times work is the universe, and the satellites that circle that universe are the things we will connect with, but we always keep this as a work first. You know, if somebody passes away, for example, a relative dies or something to that effect, you ask your boss for the day off. You just don't say, look, I'm not coming to work because somebody died. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yes. And then I know I had someone on the show previously, and they talked about how their identity became the badge. And
well, you know,
and I'm they went downhill from there, though. You know, their story went downhill from there. It was a canine officer, actually. And the family became jealous, you know, of the dog constantly. And the person just the officer just identified as the badge the whole time. And he has an interesting story about it. But you ever see that, to where sometimes, you know, if people are putting the job at the center of the universe, that sometimes it goes a little haywire? I'm sure you.
That happens more so in the executive ranks. On the lower ranks, like, I mean, when I hear the story about the canine dog handler, what happens with the canines is you actually take that dog home. You don't leave the dog at work. That dog is a part of your life. Even when you leave the department, that dog leaves the department with you. So the two of you are bonded at the hip. And so, you know, could there be some challenges in connection with a family member identifying as he's giving more empathy to that dog than his own daughter? That can be a possibility. But
yeah,
I just find generally in the executive ranks, that's when you have people that or have a very more of a monolithic approach to life and looking through the lens of the department first and everything second. Because it's a very different calling when, let's say, like you're a police chief, or if you're a precinct commander, or, you know, when you have those levels, when you have those positions, a lot of your responsibility, it becomes, I don't want to say overwhelming, but it oftentimes drives the direction of your career. Whereas, like, you know, I was an undercover for a number of years, and, you know, I came in, I did what I did. I don't feel as if what I did as an undercover really drove what I was doing outside of the job, outside of the scheduling at work. And there were several other undercovers on my team. You know, we had and we all kind of felt the same. If anything, we came in, we looked at it as, look, this is a job that we do, and then you go home from there. Like, I watch movies, and you see these undercovers that are, like, in deep. and they're living this experience, and that's not the norm. And I'm not going to tell you that you don't have those cases, but usually a lot of the investigations that you do as an undercover are usually relatively short-term investigations. Some may go for like 2 years, but that's more of an aberration than the norm. It's usually you work on something for a short period of time, you'll eventually flip a couple of people. When I say flip a couple of people, meaning people will be arrested, they'll offer you information in something we refer to as a proffer agreement, whereas they exchange testimony for a lighter sentence, and then we work up the chain. That's kind of the way a lot of these cases go. Now, some cases can go longer than others, but just going back to people that live through the badge, that's more of an aberration than it is the norm. And I'm speaking from being a police officer in the NYPD. Now, what happens in other departments, and let's say if an officer is, if an individual is a police officer in Boise, Idaho, very different dynamic in a place like Boise, Idaho. That officer is not going to have a lot of the specialization logistics that an officer in the NYPD or LAPD would have, whereas like that officer in many cases, meaning that officer in Boise, Idaho, he's going to be the individual that's going to be doing everything. I mean, they may have a team of detectives, but that one cop is going to be the jack of all trades and master of none. Whereas in a place like New York, you can offset it with another specialized unit. Well, look, you know what? That's not my wheelhouse. I'm going to bring you into the equation and you're going to deal with it. And I can just kind of park it there. So in terms of living through the badge, you may probably have that more so in the smaller departments than the larger departments, because the larger departments, you have far more resources that you can farm things out to.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. That it does. Let me ask you also about one of the self-care components that I talk about is spiritual care, spiritual wellness, and things like that. Was spirituality or religion, was that a part of your upbringing, and is it a part of your life, or where are you at with that?
You know, it's interesting. I grew up in a very spiritually grounded my family was somewhat spiritually grounded. My grandparents were far more spiritually grounded than my mother and father. As we progressed, I did the normal thing. You know, I went into church, a couple of times here and there, but I always had a foundation of spirituality. I think it manifested more with age. Like right now, spirituality is at the apex of everything that I do. Just in having a conversation with you, for example, there were things that I had going on today. Like I just came from, I had an ex-girlfriend that just passed away. She passed away, but this is an ex-girlfriend from like years and years ago. I went to the wake and I left because I felt that it was important for me to sit down with you. And granted, you and I have never met, but when I look through the sphere or the stratosphere of spirituality, I believe a lot of it evolves around what you put into the universe is what you receive. And that's God's plan. And that's how God guides us through the different pathways that we encounter throughout our lives. Mm-hmm. So I felt that it was necessary for me to get here to speak to you, because if I was on the other side of the screen and I was proctoring this podcast, I would want my guests to be on as well. I know you gave me outs in terms of, look, you know what, if you want to reschedule, that's fine. But when I look at it from the perspective of spirituality, I think you get closer to God when you do the right thing. And by doing the right thing is, you know, there's this common saying, do unto others as you would to yourself. I think that's a component in it. But ultimately, God's plan is for us to come and do what's right in the society that we're in. And so in terms of my followings of scriptures, it's not, there was a time that, you know, I would look into that stuff. Like actually when I was on active duty, I was looking into it really heavy. But as I've evolved, I found that I like to connect more so with God as best as possible through the means of prayer. My communication with God is my best friend. Every time every time I'm going through anything, I ask God for help. And the help is not so much as I want to be safe with this, but what is the best way that I can go through this? Because oftentimes our trials and tribulations set us up for the learning process for a much greater endeavor that we're going to encounter down the line. So what God does is he'll put something in front of you and so you can see it. So when you get the big one, maybe a year or 2 years down the line, it's like, okay, you can identify and say, look, I've saw this before and I know how to effectively navigate around it because it was part of God's plan in putting me in a certain place. So I can do as best as I can while I'm on the face of this earth. You and I are not having this conversation by accident. This is a part of God's plan. This can affect someone else exponentially after we step out of this. It may be as simple as one of your listeners may listen to what we're discussing and attach to a component of our discourse, and it can better enable them to handle a situation in their lives. And we, you and I, won't even know it, but it goes back to God's plan, and this is where my grounding in spirituality comes about, because nothing is by accident.
No, I love that. We share very similar thoughts on that. Absolutely. And with the spiritual wellness, let's say there is an officer out there or firefighter that is listening to the podcast that has sort of fallen away from their spiritual health, if you will. You know, do you have any advice that you could give that listener?
I think the most important thing is you need to trust in God. And not so much as, I have a statement that I give to people all the time. They feel like this is ridiculous. God is never on schedule, but always on time. Meaning, you want $1 billion right now. $1 billion may not be the answer to your life's woes. If you can't manage 200 bucks, what makes you think that you can manage $200 billion? It's just not realistic. And a lot of times when you see people that are involved or entangled in situations, you say, damn, this person is filthy rich. How are they going through this? It evolves around your ability to have the spiritual connection. So when I speak to someone that is a first responder, a lot of it is you want to establish that spiritual connection. And it doesn't mean that you need to go in church every Sunday, because there are people that will go to church religiously on Sundays. And as soon as they leave there, they look at that as a shield to protect them for embarking upon other things that are bad in society. It's an ongoing process. It's a sustainment process in having that relationship with God. So if you're walking up a dark staircase and you get a call for assistance, whereas there's a man with a gun on the 8th floor, when you come into that building, the elevator is not working. You have to walk up a dark staircase, 8 flights. And you hear, when you get up to the 5th floor, you hear calls for help. Somebody help me, somebody help me. You have your gun out. You have your flashlight out. It's you and your partner. And that's the time where you want to say to yourself, God, guide me. Granted, you have all of the training in the world up to that point. Yeah. And many times people forget about that stuff. But now is the time for you to manage that relationship with God and getting through that endeavor. You, as a prior military man, you can attest to this slogan. There are no atheists in foxholes. When you're going through a situation, it's not just going through the situation, but prior to the situation, and continue to manifest and sustain that relationship with God. And I think that's what gets you through everything throughout the course of your life, whether it's the physical wellness or the mental wellness.
No, our ideas and philosophies are so similar. Yes, absolutely. And I love the spiritual wellness component, and very happy to hear that that is such a part of your life as well. Doesn't surprise me, not at all. You know, and let me ask you a shift a little bit on a question. I had someone ask me this question once, and it really made me think. So I like to ask it to people is, what do you need to do now that you might not be able to do, Darren, in say a couple years from now? Is there anything in your life that you feel like, well, I got to do this, but, or, you know, 2-3 years down the road, may not have an opportunity. Is there anything like that in your life?
I used to think that way in the past, whereas it was a bucket list and there was a certain level of achievement that I needed to produce at certain points in my life. And then I said to myself, that may not, I'm looking at it through a humanistic perspective. So from a godly perspective, God has this path drawn out for me, and my job and my sole responsibility, I only have one job, and that one job is to do what's right. Because if I do what's right, everything will heal itself surrounding me. And God is going to put me in a pasture whereas I'm going to be better off. Sometimes I may say to myself, like, man, I can't believe, why am I going through this? But then later on in life, as I read the tea leaves, I say, wow, you know what? This was setting me up for something else. And that being said, in terms of what do I feel I need to do like right away, because in a couple of years, that may not be possible. I really don't have an answer to that, because my answer to it is, if I continue to function within the tenets of God's plan, I think that I'll be all right moving forward. There's a lot of things that I would like to do, but just because I would like to do it, that doesn't mean it's the best thing for me as a person.
Yeah, that's great. And Darren, let me ask you, what advice do you have for law enforcement officers and firefighters and really all first responders out there when it comes to taking care of that, you know, your physical health as you do, you know, in the gym, exercise, cardio? Didn't ask you, well, no, you said you don't eat beef, you don't eat pork, you know, so it sounds, you know, you're watching, you're eating that nutritious diet, you have your spiritual wellness, your mental health. What advice do you give the young first responders out there that are embarking on, you know, a career and as a public servant, of how to keep those things important, you know, keep those active, right? It's important to take care of ourselves. Cause that's what I, a lot of times I'll say that, you know, as first responders, you take an oath to serve and protect your community. Yet sometimes you fail to recognize that you and your family members are part of that community. You know, you fail to, good you know, point. Serve and protect yourself sometimes. But any advice that you'd like to give some of the younger first responders out there of how to keep their eye on the ball and things moving in the right direction?
I think the biggest thing is when you first become either a police officer or a fireman or a first responder in general, you're going to hear a lot of negative connotations attributed to what your line of work is. You're not making enough money. This is a dangerous job. It's a thankless job. It's not worth it. You need to tune all of that stuff out, and you need to focus on how you can make your experience as robust as possible. When I say as robust as possible, that doesn't mean that you want to step out and get into a gunfight every day and, you know, have a treasure trove of bodies on your hip to say that this is what my experience is. But just kind of learn as much as you can. Don't be that person that looks at the death clock. When I say the death clock, meaning I've seen many officers that after 5 years, they'll say, I only got 15 years left for retirement.
Yeah.
If you're that person, you're going to have the worst way. It's going to be the worst way possible. You want to look at it as an opportunity when you come to work. And I'm not going to give you the statement that, like most people, you ask, why did you want to become a cop or a fireman? Because I want to help people. You know, that's the default answer. But the reality of it is you became a cop or a fireman is because you felt that you had a level of interest in that particular profession. Mm-hmm. Because you had that interest in that particular profession, let that interest continue to manifest. It's going to take you in different directions. Welcome it. Don't reject it. Do what's right. When I say do what's right, not giving you the slogan of you always want to do the right thing, but you want to do what's right in your heart, because when you do what's right in your heart, the reward is exponential. A lot of times this stuff comes back to you, man, and you won't even like it at the strangest times. I give you an example. I saved a guy from there was a car accident once. This is going back years ago. I saved the person. I was part of because the fire department cut the car open and they pulled the guy out, right? So,
yeah.
But in any event, as the guy was coming, and it was the weirdest thing because the ambulance, traditionally what happens when those types of accidents, you have the ambulance would get there, you have the fire engine that would get there. For some unforeseen reason, the ambulance didn't show up. The ambulance was in backlog, but the fire engine got there, used the jaws of life. They cut the guy out. My partner and myself, we drove this person to the hospital, to the emergency room. Wow. I'm in the airport years, but this is just, I'm just coming to work. I'm doing my job, right? So yeah. It wasn't like, wow, okay, this is a great opportunity. It was just, it was a natural reaction to what was there. I'm in the airport a couple of years ago, and I'm going through customs. Unbeknown to me, this guy was working there. And yeah, I didn't remember the guy, you know, and he just, you know, he helped me out when I was coming through the airport. And it was just like, you know, it was just like, it was one of those things that I wasn't looking for. Whenever you do the right thing, it will pay you back. So looking to what you're doing as a newly minted first responder, your experiences, you will be rewarded with the experiences or the fruits of your labor on the back end. It may not be in front of you right then and then, it'll come at another time. And when you do receive that reward, it's going to be something that you say to yourself, damn, I'm so glad, I'm so happy that this happened to me. And that experience is priceless.
Yeah, oh, that's beautiful. Well, let me ask you, Darren, as we're running up on the clock here, I want to be honor your time and everything on the podcast. Is there anything that I did not ask you that you wished I would have, or an area that you'd like to spend more time on?
No, you didn't really. There wasn't an outlier that I was hoping that you would ask. And just one of the things that I hope, and this may fall outside of the purview of the podcast, but from a political perspective, you know, we have a very fractured democracy. And I'm hoping in the wake of the recent election, we have a new president, and I'm hoping that things can be repaired under the Trump administration. And I can tell you, I supported a lot of the Trump agenda when he was in office, you know, but there was a lot that I didn't support. And so mm-hmm. I'm not a person that looks through the lens, through politics in a monolithic way. I look through it, the lens of politics, in a very, very universal perspective. And I just mm-hmm. hope that with the new administration, we can get to a place where the three parties, Democrats, Independents, and Republicans, can sit down and amass a strategy that works best for the 337 million residents that reside in the United States. And that's the one thing. And this is more of a statement. It's not a question. And mm-hmm. I'm just hoping that we can get to that place.
No, I'm with you on that. And I think it's challenging because you're a professor and you might see this in your classroom as well. I teach a couple courses in the MBA school at University of Dayton. And I tell my students that, you know, I have two rules of teaching. It's pretty simple. There's no subject that we cannot discuss. We just need to do so respectfully. And I think that's right in line, in alignment with what you're talking about with politics. Yeah. It's like we really do have to get, as a culture, get back to where we can have discussions, we can adamantly disagree with each other, but we should and we need to be able to do it respectfully. You know,
absolutely.
Stop demonizing everyone and character right. assassination and cancel culture and all this stuff is
exactly.
just like, man, let's exactly. just, you know. So I'm with you on that. I hope we get back to that. In closing this out, one thing that I always toss to my guest, if you would like, is, you know, we do have the first responders out there with fire and law enforcement constantly, you know, and you see it on LinkedIn as I do. I mean, the number of lives that are lost, it's terrible, whether it's a line of duty death or just putting themselves in danger a lot of times. If you'd like to, wanted to toss it to you, if you'd like to close out the podcast with a blessing to our fellow first responders.
Whatever your religious affiliation is or your spiritual affiliation is, you know, in no way, shape, or form do I ostracize or separate from anyone, because I think that we're all as one. And that being said, as a whole, we're all brothers and sisters, be it Black, white, Asian, Latino, whatever race, creed you are part of, understand that we need to come together and unify under one tent. And that tent is the United States of America. That being said, you being a first responder, you are one of the protectors of this United States of America. Let's continue making this the greatest nation on earth. And you, in many instances, are the bedrock that not only protects our citizens, but takes us to a better place. I salute you. I salute you all, because without you, we have complete bedlam. So continue doing the great things that you're doing. And once again, God bless you and God bless your families.
Amen. Darren, I wanted to make sure I got this on the recording as well. Very much want to thank you for being a guest on the podcast and let you know that I sincerely appreciate you and the time that you've given us today.
And thank you so much. And it was a pleasure and it was an honor to be a contributor to the podcast, because there's some really germane issues that you discuss that's necessary for the viewership or the listeners to hear, because one thing that I can say and one thing that you say can change someone's life in any particular situation. And hopefully we can be those contributors.
Absolutely. All right.
All right, cool. Thank you so much, man. And it was a pleasure meeting you.
Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balanced program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.